Hey, Jonathan Goodman here. I have super exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, that I've been talking about forever, is almost here. This is published by HarperCollins. The president of Shopify endorsed it. The editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine endorsed it. This thing is going to blow the roofs off, and I'm asking that you please pre-order your copy today on your local Amazon, wherever you buy books. It's available. It's called The Obvious Choice. Hope you pre-order it. Hope you love it. Today, we're talking about growing older without growing up.
Ooh.
This is, you know, how to call it age, how to keep young at heart, while really benefiting from the wisdom of old people. And I'm excited about this. This is about exploration. And over the last few months, I have really explored why I love exploration so much. And it's not really about travel, as you'll see. Although a lot of the story, there's a lot of stories about really random, far-flung places here, Ren. You're going to enjoy it.
Oh, so it's like every other episode.
No, but this one's like...
More random?
What's that? Yeah, but you ever had a chocolate bar on weed? Yeah, but you ever...
I don't know what that's from, but I get the context, and it's funny.
No, there was a... Oh, what was that? What movie was that from? Oh, my God. Yeah, but you ever watched a baseball game on weed? It was from Half-Baked. It had to be from Half-Baked.
Oh, Half-Baked, yeah. Jim had Brewer to be and from Half-Baked. Dave Chappelle. It couldn't have been from any other movie, like, realistically.
No.
Except every no. Judd Apatow movie ever made.
Well, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, Ren.
All right.
Apples have dropped on people's heads since the days of Adam and Eve.
He's in his text now.
It just wasn't until 1666 that Newton perceived the significance of the event. Desensitized by overinformation, we resign ourselves to counting the apples, tracking the results on a spreadsheet and making nice formulas and ratios about the angle that they're falling, as opposed to thinking more deeply about why it's happening or its significance. Birds never sing in caves was something that Thoreau once wrote. And neither do we. That's because when you explore with intention, you cease to become intent in your complacency. The best cup of coffee I ever had was made from a packet of Folgers Instant in a deep yellow plastic cup, the kind that they give toddlers at parties. It was the sixth day of a four-day trip to Ometepe, an island in Nicaragua made up of two volcanoes. But my wife, nanny, mother-in-law, and our two sons, and we rented an ATV. We got stranded on the island due to high winds and the ferry couldn't return. So scrambling, we found a new place to stay, and on the other side of the road there was this bamboo shack, the kind that served food to the local workers. Now the woman who ran the joint, she had that aged, kind of tanned and wrinkled skin that made it unclear whether or not she was 50 or like 90 years old. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She didn't speak English. And she told us that she had been there in that spot serving food in that shack for 40 years. She said that she has six kids working construction in Costa Rica. And we asked if she has a husband. Alagunas. She laughed. A few.
Oh, that's awesome.
There was no menu. Desayuno. Wow. Shit, that fell. Was a plate of overcooked eggs, rice, beans, and fried plantain. Cost 80 cordobo, which is about $2.10 or so US. We were hopelessly lost. We were stranded in the middle of nowhere. But my wife was sitting beside me, and B, our nanny, was sitting beside us. My mother-in-law was looking for treasures along the rocks with my two boys. And I was looking out at Lake Nicaragua, wondering how in the hell I got there, drinking the best damn coffee of my life. Maps, assistance, and Googling everything you do diminishes the magic in many ways. The worst thing that can happen is that things go according to plan. Travel's for turning on, Vacations are for shutting off. Travel heightens your senses. Vacations dull them. Travel's for discovery. Vacation, escapism. Now, vacations are fine, but designing a daily life that you don't need to escape from, however, is better. What I'm about to talk about, though, is not about travel. A lot of the examples are going to be from far-flung places. That's just kind of who I am. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to use that word. I'm not going to use the word travel. That's because you don't have to get on an airplane or even leave your home to make your day-to-day more fun or exciting. So in its place, I'm going to sub in the word exploration. Okay, now some stuff about Band-Aids in Uruguay. So...
Please continue as he takes the second swig of his Coca-Cola, appropriately Coke timed, Zero. But not yet 2 o'clock, which is the perfect time for Coke bit early. Zero. Too early, John. Too soon.
Band-Aids and Uruguay would make a good metal band name. Just saying.
That's a great name. Well said, Amber.
It would. And the word that they use for Band-Aid is trita, which is basically translates to shreds, which is even better for a metal band.
Wow.
Shreds in Uruguay?
Yeah.
I love it.
I dig it.
All right, so there's this quip from a Buddhist monk riding a horse, that I love. Where are you going? This man asks the monk. Ask my horse. The monk replies. Getting lost seems like the beginning of finding your way or finding another way. Let go or be dragged, states the Zen proverb. It's hard to know where a bus will take you in Montevideo, which is the capital of Uruguay. Street names are long, and because they're named after dates, people, or events, many are similar. The map that we had condensed the names to fit. We had this paper map. All that we would see, for example, would be Avenida General, like without the L. Dot, dot, dot. Okay, so it's a general, right? We're looking for. Probably. Which general do we want, right? Which street name, which general do we want? Do we want General Flores, Pagola, Enrique Martinez? Maybe General Flores y Garibaldi? Who the hell knows? Uruguay is a fantastic place to get lost. Especially before the days of, like, Google Maps. Because... the paper map, like every street name looked the same on the paper map. So you would literally not know where you should go, even if you had a map. When I'm home and know where I'm going, I tend to daydream. Sometimes at the end of the day, in that time when time slows down after dinner but before bed, I think about my day and I try to remember what I did, and nothing comes to mind. It's because I wasn't there. Well, like, I was there, obviously, but not there. You know what I mean? I was gliding. I was a leaf floating down a stream, moving through my day in a detached and passive way with a sense of direction, but without full engagement. Thinking is to humans as swimming is to cats, joked the behavioral psychologist Daniel Kahneman. We only do it if we have to. When you stay within your familiar confines, it's hard to be present. Being more present leads to less stress, fewer negative thoughts, more focus, improved happiness, and better control of our emotions. In Michael Easter's words, which are true for me as well, meditation's one way, but I've never been able to meditate. Getting lost is another. So one day we're rolling along Avenida 18, I'll say it in Spanish, Avenida de Eje Ocho de Julio. That's how crappy my Spanish accent is. July 18th. When a man walked past the driver without pain. Thick black hair, a buttoned-up plaid blue shirt tucked into his jeans, covering a bit of a gut, and a torn gray backpack. Trita, trita, he yelled, holding up a torn box of Band-Aids. A woman waved him over. She gave him a coin. He gave her a Band-Aid in return. Then another and another. He made 4 sales. Then he got off the bus, walked across the street, and waited for one going in the opposite direction. Trita man reminded me of a sales lesson I'd long since forgotten. The legendary advertising man Gary Halbert once asked a room of aspiring copywriters a question. He said, imagine you're opening a hamburger stand on the beach. What do you need most to succeed? Location, one said. Taste, said another. Halbert responded, you miss the most important thing. What you need most is a starving crowd. Many of the women riding that bus in Uruguay wore thin heels. Montevideo's full of old cobblestone streets. By the end of the day, they had blistered feet. So our hero went to the Farmacia, bought a box of Band-Aids, hopped a bus, and sold them to him. A starving crowd. I noticed what was going on because my senses were turned on. Because I was exploring, lost, on high alert, reading every street sign, eyes forward, not down, locked into a device, tracking my exact position via a blue dot on a screen. That Band-Aid example was so cool. It just, it reminds me of like every time that I'm on the bus in New York City or whatever, some dude is selling, you know, chocolates for the basketball team that he's supporting or whatever. And it's like, you can't do better than that, you know? Like, there's got to be a better thing to sell right now than chocolate bars or Calvin's scout group sold apples in front of like the LCBO, like the liquor store and a couple other stores. And it's like, you really can't figure out a better way to fundraise than to stand outside of a store that sells apples and sell those same apples for more money than the person could buy in the store. I mean, I get that they're going to make money because people are going to want to support the kids. But to that, I also question, like, what lesson are you teaching them? Because that's not how the world works. These kids are not going to be cute forever. Especially once they become teenagers. And so, what are you teaching them by selling that same thing? It just, it's such a weird way to fundraise that I feel like somebody could probably do better. Other than Girl Guide cookies, those are bomb. I'm always going to buy those. I just bought two boxes.
It's the greatest, I got Allison in trouble. Fundraising ever.
I got Allison. I got Calvin in trouble for those because he was only supposed to eat one Girl Guide cookie, but I ate like eight, and Allison was like, "Calvin, you were only supposed to eat one. The box is half empty." And I was like, "Yeah, that was me."
John, I've got to ask for a timeout for the Americans listening. What did you say the type of cookie was that? What did you just call it? Girl Guide cookie.
Yeah, what do you call them?
Call them Girl Scout cookies.
Okay.
I mean, I've just never heard the term, and I'm confident that many Americans out of the 10 that are listening have not been familiarized with the term Girl Guide cookies. As a matter of fact, if you say that in the South,
sure,
we'll arrest you.
You also
Girl Guide cookies.
Use Fahrenheit.
Not guy. Guide.
Guide.
Oh, guide. Guide. Okay. Yeah. Well, that makes a lot more sense to me, John, because I was like, you can't say that in the South, buddy. Like,
sure.
You just can't do that down here.
I mean, you guide Americans also use Fahrenheit. Also, for no reason at all, remove the U from a bunch of words except for glamour, none, in which case you leave it in for no reason. Use gallons to measure gas and milk, but liters to measure all other liquids. I can continue if you like. There's a lot of things that don't make sense, my friend.
Frankly, I don't see the problem here, John. But please, it's your show. Talk about what we will, sir. Great Saturday Night Live skit about that, too. I'm going to send to you after this.
So good.
You've seen it.
One of the best Saturday Night Lives.
One of the best ever. And it's not great delivery. It's just so cleverly written, right? Am I right? The delivery is trash, but it's just so cleverly written that it's freaking hilarious.
There's a little bit.
And the comedian is so dry. They wrote right in his style. Yeah. They gave him exactly what he delivers well. And it's just so good. And Keenan, oh my gosh. Anyway, I digress.
And what about equality?
Yeah, what about equality for men of color? It will also measure football in yards, not meters. Like he just ignores. It's so
football.
Good.
Will we be kicking the ball? Not much.
No,
not
no,
at all. Not much. Only a few times, only but not very times. Often. And how many points will we get when we kick the ball? Sometimes one and sometimes three.
It's so perfect because it's so ludicrous. Keenan steals it. Now that I'm up on the, now that I know that they're girl guide cookies and not girl guy cookies, no, I feel much more comfortable continuing to listen from the South.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. So please continue, John. I apologize.
So the most alert.
My fault.
So I'll tell you about the most alert that I've ever been. The most alert that I've ever been was driving a motorbike in Lombok, which is an island in Indonesia. Hey, Jonathan Goodman, and I wanted to invite you to pre-order my next book called The Obvious Choice. This is my first traditionally published book. It's been published by HarperCollins. Sam Poe, if you listen to My First Million podcast, called it a much-needed recalibration for a business generation that's focused on the wrong thing at the wrong time. Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, said that if you want to win in business without feeling like you need to win the internet, you gotta get this book. So why pre-order it instead of getting it when it's ready? Well, there's two reasons, really. The first is that it's really, really beneficial for me, selfishly. It helps me a lot. My publishers love it. But the second beneficial for you is you actually lock in the best ever price. No joke, I pre-ordered a book that was $40 not too long ago. And because the price went down over the pre-order period for like a day to $29.99, when the book arrived to me on the day of the launch, I actually got refunded by Amazon $10. Because when you pre-order a book on Amazon, you lock in the lowest price ever. So if Amazon ever lowers the price, which they often do, you're gonna get that price and get refunded, whatever the difference is from when you pre-ordered it. So there's benefit to you, there's benefit to me. Please pre-order the book, The Obvious Choice, anywhere you buy books, but Amazon gives you this other benefit. Hope that you love it. Hope you're good.
Sure. What?
Can I go on?
Please, I'm sorry, John. Just at this point, I should no longer be astounded by the locations that are attached to your stories.
Oh, just wait. There's more.
Somehow, I still am.
There's more. We rented a house at the top of the hill. It came with this moped, except it wasn't a moped. It was a motorbike with gears. And I'd never driven a motorbike before. I'd only driven those little putt-putt automatic, like 250cc mopeds that they rent to young tourists finding themselves, you know, in Southeast Asia.
Right.
So I get on this motorbike and I drive it down the hill and I drive it up the hill a few times. Low gear for uphill, high gear for straightaway. Seems simple enough. Then Allison hopped on the back and we set off to get groceries. Okay. Picture a road with two lanes going in each direction. You got it? Mm-hmm. So now imagine that instead of two lanes of traffic, that same road has eight motorbikes across beside one another, communicating through horn honks. That's Lombok. And yet, I felt really safe driving there. 77% of all car accidents occur within 10 miles of the driver's home. And that happens for two reasons. The first is just simple exposure. People make more frequent short trips. More trips equals more potential for accidents. But the second, though, is due to complacency and familiarity. When you're in familiar confines, you let your guard down. You stop paying attention. It's a false sense of security. I have this memory of driving in Lombok. All right, so we're a pack of sardines all moving in one direction together. And somebody was approaching me head on the wrong side of the street. Horns beeped and all of us sardines just sort of moved together fluidly to let this one person through going in the wrong direction.
You just unlocked. We let the guy pass. For Amber.
We let the guy pass, and then we all just kind of, you know, went back into our formation. Nobody was texting. In a weird way, the inherent danger that knowing that road rules were optional made everybody more alert, which made the driving oddly more safe. Now, I'm not saying that a road should be like this, but I do wish that people will pay more attention when they drive. And that's exactly what tends to happen when they're further away from home, unfamiliar in their surroundings. I don't mean to make any of this sound scary. You don't need to go to far-flung places, though I highly recommend it, or do things like drive motorbikes in Indonesia, though it is fun, or figure out the bus system in Uruguay, though I wouldn't stop you. You can start small. You can find little ways close to home that, stealing a phrase from the poet Rumi, purchase bewilderment. So here's a few ways to start getting lost. Number one, you could eat at that weird ethnic restaurant on the corner. Go in there and ask what they like. Don't look at the menu. Eat what they give you. Drink what they bring you. If it's nasty, no big deal. Get some fried chicken after. Like when I went for Ethiopian food. You bet your ass I went for fried chicken afterwards. It was not good. Allison warned me too. I think it was Eritrean food, actually. I don't think it was Ethiopian food. I think it was Eritrean food. Similar. A little bit different. Anyway. Go on I Am Here dates. Choose a random pocket of your city. Take a cab there. Set out without your phones, not knowing what you'll do, where you'll eat, or who you'll meet. Or you can discover new books. You can choose a major award for books. Pulitzer, Man Booker, Hugo, whatever. Then pick a random year, say 1998. Find the winners and runners up. Download a sample from each on your Kindle or reserve them from the library. Sample them and continue to read the one that grabs you. If you want to be safe, says the author Corey Mascara, don't do anything. Don't go out, drive, experiment, learn, or try nothing. Then you'll be safe, and one day you'll still die. All a comfort does is that it provides you a false state of confidence. When you're comfortable, you shut off. When you think you know what to expect, you stop noticing things. When you're following a routine, your senses become dulled. And this is a dangerous way to live. Okay. Crater Lake was circled on our map because all national parks and monuments were circled on our map. Allison and I parked at the same time as another family. Before they stepped both feet out of their car, the mom and dad were bent over their phones. It should be this way, one of them said, as he pointed in the direction of the visitor center. So I smiled at them, and without showing my teeth to the man, and then I nodded my head slightly, the way awkward men say hello to one another, and we followed their family up the path. Some natural spectacles take your breath away with their sheer power. The Grand Canyon in Arizona, the Kanapali Coast in Kauai, the jagged edges of the Rocky Mountains that flank you on both sides as you drive from Banff to Jasper in Alberta. Others, like Crater Lake, are so deceptively plain that they give you breath. Like, how is something so perfect in its simplicity possible here on this rough earth? That the only explanation involves the existence of a greater power, an artist who long ago chose this spot as their canvas and took a paintbrush for each of our senses. The smell of the pines, the sound of the wind, the sight of the teal blue water, the feel of the dirt path under their feet, and the taste of the peanut butter and jelly mixing in your mouth as you take it all in. Profoundly alive. Beautiful, said the mum from the car. It looks just like the picture. It looks just like the picture. Is there a sadder phrase in all of the English language? To be so well prepared, so organized, so guarded, to be in so much of a rush, so afraid of the unknown that you stop brailing the world like a toddler seeing his first tree. If you want to add more wonder into your experiences, I've got a few pieces of advice. Number one, don't look it up in advance. Photoshopped images of what you're about to see ruin what you're about to see. Number two, don't do your research. Hire local guides, ask the volunteers and forest rangers questions, read the posted information signs. The learning about the thing while you're visiting the thing adds to the enjoyment of the thing. And number three, expect to miss out on a lot. Don't move on too quickly to the next place. Aimlessly wander about. Accept that no matter what you do, you won't do it all or see it all, so don't try. Instead, linger, take your time. Touch the tree bark, watch the birds, play a game of tag. When I asked my friend how his honeymoon went, he said that it flew by. That he's exhausted. Over the course of 2 weeks in Thailand, they stayed in 6 different places. We'd both been looking forward to this trip for so long and wanted to do it all, he said. One time I was on a plane from Toronto to Los Angeles, and there were stronger headwinds than expected, so we had to make an emergency landing somewhere in the north of Mexico to refuel. Japanese guy was sitting beside me. He didn't speak English well. As a result, he didn't understand the overhead announcements and thought that we'd arrived in LAX. I explained to him that we were actually in Mexico for more gasoline. We're staying on the plane. Should be about 30 minutes, I said. He nodded. Then he took out a notebook and he flipped to a page that said Mexico. He put a check mark beside it. Been there, done that. Guess he never has to go back. Which is sad, because Mexico was special. The colors. God damn the colors in Mexico, man. And the music and the food. Like real Mexican food. Not Taco Tuesday at Tiago's Taquiera at the corner of West 18th and Morgan. And the energy and the vibrancy and the people. My God, the people. One time our family was waiting for food. Calvin was 3 and this local boy was having a birthday party down an alleyway. And all of a sudden we look over, we hear this voice. Parati, it said. And then the boy handed Calvin a loot bag and ran back to his own birthday party. Mexico is really special. But you've got to be there to know that. Like, really be there. Not sit on a plane on a tarmac for 30 minutes. Not go to an all-inclusive resort. Checking off that you've visited a place doesn't mean that you've been to that place. Off of the coast of Newfoundland in Canada, there's two self-governing French islands called Saint-Pierre and Miquelon. It's France. They use euros, bake baguettes, the whole thing. It's a political leftover, a remnant of a time long past. My friend Dave Royal grew up there, and so he invited me to visit for a week of lobster trapping, of cod fishing, of wine drinking. On the plane over, I met a passport stamp collector. Apparently that's a thing. Her plan was to clear customs, get the unique passport stamp, stay overnight in a hotel, and then fly home the following day. All right, to each their own. But my unsolicited advice to her is to consider staying an extra night or two. Maybe, you know, check out the place, mosey about, grab a latte, eat some cheese. Learn about how Al Capone took advantage of the unique political makeup and location of the archipelago as a strategic hub for bootlegging alcohol during the Prohibition era. Might be fun. The paradox of trying to fit it all in is that the only way to experience more is to schedule less. Maps and guidebooks have checklists. Life doesn't. More focus on the doing, less on the done, I say. You want to know what Al Capone used to do from these places? It was pretty cool. So first of all, these two islands are like the most random, like old political remnant. Because they're so strategically located, you basically have to zoom in on a map. Like if you go to Newfoundland in Canada, you basically have to zoom in on a map like over and over and over again. There's these two tiny islands. It's 5,500 people total who live on both. And they kept being fought over back and forth between Britain and France and a couple of other places. And they were never used, but they were just very strategic from a military sense because they were basically like right in between, not quite in between, but like off the coast of North America. And so all over these islands, there's like military stuff built up, but it was never actually used ever for any military action. And so France eventually ended up with it. And now it's just one of those weird things where you can just fly like an hour off of the coast of Newfoundland or Nova Scotia and you're in France. It's the weirdest thing ever. But because of that, when Prohibition existed in North America and Canada and the United States, you couldn't have alcohol, but you could in Europe. And so what these bootleggers would do, Al Capone was the biggest one, what these bootleggers would do is they basically set up shop on these islands and they'd fly in just like massive amounts of alcohol, of liquor. And then they would, in the middle of the night, drive it out in a boat to the middle of the ocean, sink it with a buoy. Somebody else would come in a boat in the middle of the night from Newfoundland. Find the buoy, they had communicated where it was, lift up all of the alcohol, put it in their boat, leave the cash back sunk down. And that's how they got like tons of the alcohol back into town. And so all over Saint-Pierre, all of the hotels and stuff have all of these just like crazy cool remnants of Al Capone and all of these gangsters and stuff like that there. because they all set up shop and spent a lot of time there during that era. It's pretty fun. Should I keep going with more random places? Amber, you're so scared by all of this. I love it.
Literally, I got lost in my own neighborhood the other day. Like, I shit you not. I lived here for...
It's great. It's
down one street. I got lost.
It's great.
So the so idea... Funny. I can't even... Like, the fact that you remember the names of all of these places is wild to me. But, like, yeah, just know this is, like, a horror film in my brain.
Well, it's, you know... I'm sure with you it's the same way. There are some things that just really weirdly come natural to you. Mm-hmm. That you've never quite understood.
Surprise and delight.
Yeah, surprise and delight.
Surprise
and
it just comes weirdly natural to her.
You feel feelings. That comes natural to you.
Yeah. That is also weird. Yes.
Super weird.
Feelings.
And so everybody has that, right? Everybody has things that weirdly, oddly come natural to them. That the more they lean into those, not necessarily to do those things, but realizing what those things allow them to do better and leaning into that. I think, you know, if I were to use an overused term that means nothing, you know, that to me is alignment. And I think about writing books and why I think, I mean, I've put a tremendous amount of effort into it, but why I think that I'm getting to be pretty damn good at writing books is because I've always had this weird ability to remember and connect really obscure, random things from my past. Could be stuff that I've read. It's not like I have, I don't even know how I can communicate my process of writing the books or the stories and whatever, because it's not like I've got some storage system for them. It just, for whatever reason, like the story about Al Capone, right? Like, I was in St. Pierre and Miquelon for a week. Like, Calvin was just born, like 7 years ago. And for whatever reason, I was like, oh, Prohibition. That could be a nice little quip to add in here to make the point.
So you remember that. Yeah, I am not 100% certain what color my house is, and I've lived here for 6 years. So it fascinates me that you remember all this stuff.
But there are other things that you're great at, right, naturally. That come natural to you, right?
Yeah.
And this is definitely one of them for me, is not just remembering obscure facts and stories, but for whatever reason, they seem to come up and I was like, oh, this can connect to that over there, over here, which connects to here. And like, I don't know, this memory of this family that we parked beside at Crater Lake.
Right. I should remember she said, it's just like the picture. Like I would just not in one of my ears and right out the other. I'd have forgotten that lady like 30 years ago. Like,
it's just, but you know, I don't have any kind of a visual memory at all.
That makes sense.
But
do you have internal dialogue? Do you hear thoughts like in your brain? Like, I learned that
I
not
think
everybody
so.
Does
that. What is that? What? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you don't talk to yourself in your brain all the time?
The chatterbox. Louise Hay described it as a chatterbox.
Should I be?
I mean, no, everybody's different. Some people have it, some people don't. And like you don't have visual memory. I don't either. If I try to visualize an apple in my brain, it's all black. I can't see shit.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so that's interesting.
I don't think that I chatter to myself. I definitely, not as much anymore. I feel like I'm... I mean, right near the end of The Obvious Choice, actually, like in the conclusion, like the final, one of the final passages is that I finally, after all of this, after all I've been through, finally feel like things are going at a good pace. Mm-hmm. There were definitely times, Amber, when things were a little bit crazier for us, perhaps misaligned for us, where I had a lot of trouble sleeping. And I'd wake up in the middle of the night. I wouldn't be able to go back to sleep. I'd be worrying. I'd be thinking. That very rarely happens now.
But thinking, is it in thought, like in words? Like,
yeah. I mean, I would have to have like pen and paper beside my bed, because the only way for me to fall back asleep would be to basically scribble. Like, and I don't even remember what it was. I mean, it was just like constant worry about things like payroll, or why the heck are we working with this consultant, or just so many things that seem to have been done that I had no idea why we were doing them. And so I would be questioning them or trying to figure out better ways to do it. And it was, you know what I think it was? I think it was trying to make sense of the chess pieces that were laid out in front of me instead of questioning whether the chess pieces needed to be there in the first place. Yeah. I was trying to organize the board, and then I was like, wait, why does this board exist?
Meta.
Right.
That's why.
I think.
Do you have an internal dialogue? I'm curious. I feel like.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Really? Everything happens to me like in real time. So 1 second in and 1 second out, like it's always the way that I've processed everything. I think that's what gives me the advantage of witty repertoire. Right? Like quickness is, I don't know if it's a survival mechanism. I don't know why it's like that, but I rarely have deep, continuous thoughts about anything. I'm sort of always reacting, but I think start selling tickets to the third seat, because one of the most enjoyable things in life is to hear John express himself truthfully and fully, and to see how quickly Amber rejects everything that he thinks and does in his real life. she, in real time, she unlocks a new nightmare every time John talks. It's just on her face. So, like, it's a full show. It's like watching a masterful forward and a masterful goalie, one-on-one.
For the record, I'm actually very jealous. I know I cannot do it. Like, I wish I was capable of that. But when you get lost in your own neighborhood, traveling's a little scary.
So I got, so you're going to like this, you're going to like this story then, Amber. I am so looking forward to your face. I am so looking forward to your face in this story.
I know I am.
Oh my God, this one's a fucking doozy. All right. Ah, let's start with this.
Get a good stretch, John.
So I tend to think that we're lost all of the time. I think that some of us are just more willing to embrace it than others. The sidewalk you walk on, did you know that it's reinforced with rebar? Or that concrete strengthens with compression and weakens with stretch? Amber, of course, knows this because every man she's ever dated has been a large vehicle operator.
I like big trucks, but I cannot lie.
This is the best.
Does that helicopter come in yellow?
Man,
if you don't like what's going on, Amber, you can lodge a complaint with our HR department.
It's okay. I won't remember tomorrow.
Email is amber@theptdc.com.
Right. Send an email to yourself to complain about it.
I talk to myself all the time, so we'll have a discussion about this later.
Have you ever thought about the billion or so wooden pallets that were used to transport literally everything that exists in your home at some point? How many things exist that you know? How many things exist that you know nothing about yet interact with every single day? You don't know much more than you know, so admit it, you're lost. A stray cat roaming the alleys, seeking warmth and familiarity in places that feel foreign. Being lost is an inevitable reality of being a human being. Never knowing exactly where you are or what you're doing is normal, so be proud of it. Shout it out. I am lost. Acceptance is the first step. Next, how to live in a perpetually lost state. Think about early mountaineers like Hugh Stutfield or Herman Woolley traversing the Columbia ice field. We now know it's 230 square kilometers. they didn't. Early explorers didn't know whether they'd be in the wilderness for a few days or a few months. They carried their supplies on their backs. They didn't have a map because they were the ones making the map. Early explorers never expected to know exactly where they were, yet at the same time, many of them knew their instruments pretty well and understood their trajectories within a reasonable degree of accuracy. That's from Rebecca Solnit in her book, A Field Guide to Getting Lost. Know your instruments. Maintain the correct general trajectory. That's the key. On the Pacific coast of Mexico, about 40 minutes north of Puerto Vallarta, there's a hike called Monkey Mountain. You can choose between the south or north trail. The south trail isn't hard. It's well marked. It's basically a service road. Most people who do it sweat, get to the top, walk down, and take an air-conditioned shuttle back to town. It takes a few hours. Check, check. Been there, done that. Got a few pics for social media. The north trail, on the other hand, isn't well marked. That's the one that we did. Obviously. A taxi driver dropped Allison, Calvin, who was six at the time, and I off in the middle of nowhere. No signs, no people. After walking for 20 minutes in the wrong direction, we later discovered we saw a farmer. Mona Montaña, we asked. Monkey Mountain. He pointed back to where we came. Equip yourself by learning a few phrases. Translation apps has made that easy for travel, but it's no different when exploring a new hobby. For example, if you wanted to explore CrossFit, learn some jargon. Knowing what RX and WOD means helps keep first day jitters at bay. Language is an instrument. Along the way, we passed more farms. Dogs barked. I grabbed a stick. They left us alone. Karate teachers don't teach how to start fights. They teach how to avoid them. Self-control comes from conflict avoidance, the de-escalation of aggression. Physically weak people are generally more timid. As a result, they miss out a lot on life. Physical preparedness is an instrument. We saw father and son bouldering along the way with a guide. They weren't going up the mountain. Instead, they were messing about for a few hours on a random boulder in the jungle. Whenever we go on vacation, we try to find a place to climb. What a wonderful way to waste time. Allison and Calvin join them for a while before moving on. Knowing your trajectory allows you the freedom to veer off of the path for some bonus fun. At one point, we lost the trail. My wife and son stopped. I walked through the brush to a higher point, cut up my legs, was bleeding. What's an adventure without a few scratches? From the high point, I could make out the trail. I shouted to Allison and she led Calvin to the right area. Then I climbed back down and joined them. You might have to double back, walk extra, climb more. Getting lost burns more calories. Physical endurance is an instrument. We got to the top. Other hikers that took the south trail were there. Where'd you come from? One asked. And I told him. Oh, I heard that way's dangerous, they said. It wasn't really. The hike took us longer. We got lost a few times, have a few scrapes and cuts, but we knew the general direction that we had to go and we were confident in our instruments. Now, I didn't say that to them. That would have been weird. If I'm honest, I wasn't all that interested in the conversation. I was looking forward to my sandwich too much. So all that I said to them was, yeah, kind of dangerous. Life is nothing more than a series of waypoints pulling you forward in a general direction, not a destination to drive towards. Don't walk straight, veer side to side. Don't rush, meander, trip and fall sometimes, scrape your knees, step off the beaten path, trample the grass. So we're at the bottom now. We tried to call a cab. No luck. The three of us are now stuck in the middle of nowhere. After 20 minutes, we saw a car. It was one of those mini delivery trucks. It was white. The back carriage was clearly handmade. Wood was splintering. A few planks were across of it, but no roof. He would have probably been delivering produce, watermelons, based off the time of year, and was on his way home in the opposite direction of where we needed to go. So Allison waved him down, explained our situation in broken Spanish, and he turned around and motioned for us to get in the back. Said he'd drop us off in town. The tailgate hinge was busted. We had to climb up and over to get in. So Allison went first. I lifted up Calvin. She helped him get up and over, and then I got in. We all stood in the back, knees bent, holding on to a wooden plank. The man drove really fast. The carriage that we were in bounced on every divot and root. This is dangerous, right? Calvin asked. Yeah, buddy, it is. But like, a good kind of danger. The kind of danger that really isn't that dangerous. Where you know you'll be okay. The kind of danger that makes the hair on your arms stick up and your knees shake. Where the wind stings your eyes, but you just let it happen because you have more important things to focus on. You're alert, in tune, aware of everything. The kind of danger where your mind can't wander, where you forget about all of the nagging annoyances in your life. Where you have no other choice than to focus on what's happening right here, right now. The kind of danger that makes you feel 100% alive. We got dropped off in a town called Higuera Blanca. Calvin bought this gross marshmallow pastry thing at a bodega. Allison and I got water and cookies. Then we walked to the town square and we grabbed a cab. Confidence lags experience. The more experience you get, the more confident in your abilities you'll become. Before you have the confidence that comes with experience, gain comfort by knowing your trajectory and improving the quality of your instruments. Accept that you'll get lost. Accept that you're already lost. Venture, explore, be willing to try stuff. Because the more that you try stuff, the more you'll be forced to figure it out. And the more you figure it out, the more confidence you'll gain in your ability to figure it out. Eventually, you'll learn that everything is figure outable. And that's when life gets real fun. I'll send you guys that picture of Calvin and Allison on the back of that truck after.
Yes, please.
This is dangerous, right? Yeah. And irresponsible.
Don't do this without mommy and daddy.
This is and irresponsible.
Voice of reason.
Passport
dusted off. Black man. What can I say about hiking and hopping onto a truck bed in Mexico as a black man? Like, this, my people don't do this shit, John.
Ren, you gotta come.
I watch too many episodes of Criminal Minds to be doing shit like that.
Right, right.
Ren, Ren, yeah. Can you please come out to Mexico this winter and hang out with us?
That's exactly what I'm going to do, John. You know I've got a passport now. We talked about it.
I'm so proud of you. I'll see you there. I'll give you my dates. I'm serious.
Thank you, John.
I'm serious.
I'm serious too, man.
We'll do some stuff.
I need to be a party to one of these stories at some point in my life. Just even if I don't do shit because I'm a black dude and I don't do this type of shit. But just for you to say, oh, and Rim was there.
We got an ATV this year for Mexico. We've got an ATV rented for the 4 months.
Again, it's falling squarely into black people don't do this shit territory, yeah. John. But thank you for announcing.
You don't understand ATV.
I'll tell you, right. My commentary, I'll provide you a whole nother book.
Just to have
Mexico Ren with like a black guy.
Commentary the entire time would be worth it.
Yeah, it'd be
that's,
worth it.
That's the it. Name of a book right there. Mexico, yes. Comma, with a black guy.
With a black guy, yeah, that's it.
And you just do a series of travelogues. Thailand, with a black guy.
Nope. every first chapter is like, hell no.
Every first chapter is just black people don't camp, or black people don't do boats.
I like to start out by saying, hike. Normally, my people don't do this shit. But I'm here for you, dear reader. Chapter two, nope.
Oh my god, holy
chapter
shit!
Chapter three, fiend. That's it.
I'm gonna call my agent, cancel this book, return the advance, and just start on this new thing.
Please.
Oh my god.
You're welcome.
This is fucking funny, though.
Oh, man.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's the thing has some teeth, John. It's got legs. So you know, I'll watch out for your further communication.
We'll start a podcast that just says black people don't do boats. That's the name of the podcast.
Right. That's it. The entire episode, my friend asked me to go out boating. Nope. See you so next episode on Black
every
Guys
episode,
Don't Do Boats.
Every episode just the story of a white guy inviting a black guy to do something black guys don't do.
Nope. Nope. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Next episode, black guys don't do swimming in lakes of water, natural bodies of water. A friend asked me to go swimming. I said, sure. He said, it's in the lake. Nope. We'll see you next time on...
Oh my god, that'd be funny.
It's good stuff. It's quality stuff. I'm gonna have a snack.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.